This message comes from NPR sponsor Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, where hundreds of researchers make new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber scientists. Learn more about their momentum at danafarber.org/everywhere.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR.
Hey, Shortwavers, Regina Barber here with a very special guest, Manoush Zomorodi, the host of NPR's TED Radio Hour podcast. Hey, Manoush.
Hey, Regina.
So, Manoush, you've got an exciting new series coming out, Body Electric.
We do. It is a special 6-part interactive series investigating the relationship between our technology and our bodies and how we can improve it.
That's good, because my relationship with technology, I think, is bad.
Oh.
Because most days, I'm sitting in my desk, hunched over, staring at my computer screen.
I think you are actually speaking for many of us, which is why historian Vibar Cregan-Reed, one of the researchers I interviewed, says that people today have Anthropocene bodies.
Yeah, and the idea of an Anthropocene body is simply one which is being remade and reshaped by the Anthropocene environment.
So being inside, not getting vitamin D, putting ourselves into positions so that we can see a screen for hours at a time, it's taking a toll.
Mm-hmm.
And our bodies are always trying to be the best bodies that they can be for us. And modern life is really, really confusing them. So it's not so much that we're changing through evolution, but we're changing our bodies and what they're able to do through our habits.
So, look, different economies have always put different demands on the human body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lightning fast history lesson here. You got hunters and gatherers. They are lean and nimble for all the foraging and hunting and fishing we did for hundreds of thousands of years. Then about 12,000 years ago, the agricultural revolution happens and we're farming. We don't have to run around to find food, but there is still a ton of movement in our lives. Even until about 5,000 years ago, when the chair was invented. Weird to think of a chair needing to be invented.
Yeah, that's a fun fact. I love it.
Right? But only rich and powerful people really sat on them up until about the Industrial Revolution. That is when work gets more efficient, of course, with factories, and we start to have the concept of leisure time, of sitting. So fast forward a little bit, you get to the 1930s, and you get white-collar workers. You get offices with lots of desks, and that's when people really start sitting for a living. Then in the 1970s and 80s, computers, of course, come on the scene, and that's when we start sitting all the time, looking at screens, fingers over keyboard, or in the last couple decades, on tap screens.
Okay, so I'm listening to you with this history lesson, and I'm thinking about health, but now we have penicillin, and now we have modern medicine, we have safety standards in the workplace. Surely things are overall better now these days?
Well, sure. I mean, so back then, the threats to our health were more immediate, right? It was losing a limb, inhaling dangerous chemicals. But today, we have this slow-moving, long-term health crisis that is going to impact us for decades to come.
Oof, this is very alarming.
I think it's going to take some experimenting with social norms to reset our culture when it comes to our habits. Which is where, Regina, the interactive part of this series comes in.
I'm excited. Let's do it.
Okay. So we are partnering with Columbia University Medical School to see if their findings in the lab can work in the real world. And we're inviting our listeners to try out what researcher Keith Diaz thinks might be a simple way to maybe tackle this problem.
I'm so interested. We're going to play part of your conversation with Keith, along with laying out the big interactive element of the series in just a minute.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Dana-Farber scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years, data through 2022. They've made one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute is changing lives everywhere. More at danafarber.org/everywhere. This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Schizophrenia and Psychosis Action Alliance, shattering barriers to treatment, survival, and recovery. People with schizophrenia can recover and thrive. More at wecanthrive.org. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Slack. Sometimes it feels like there aren't enough hours in the workday, especially if you're trying to grow your business. That's why you and your team need Slack. It's the AI-powered platform where work happens, and it has so many helpful features, like huddles for impromptu meetings and workflow builder to automate tasks. Slack is what you need to help everyone have a productive, easy day. Slack, grow your business here. Learn more at slack.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Humana. Your employees are more than your coworkers. They're the heartbeat of your business. That's why Humana offers modern group benefits designed to protect employees and their families with dental, vision, life, and disability coverage. Humana knows every employee and every business is unique. That's why they listen to your needs and build plans with you and your team in mind. That's the power of human care.
Okay, so you just heard a fast history lesson of how economic eras have morphed the human body from hunter-gatherers all the way to the Anthropocene bodies we have today. So what do we do about it? This is the focus of NPR's Body Electric, a new series with TED Radio Hour host Manoush Zomorodi. And in episode one, Manoush talks to a researcher who thinks he's found a simple way to tackle the problem.
So some of the latest data suggests that the average adult spends 11 hours per day engaging in some form of technology. And what are we typically doing when we're consuming technology? Most likely not moving.
Keith Diaz is an associate professor of behavioral medicine at Columbia University's Medical Center.
Unfortunately, we live in a world that the default position is sitting. And we see movement now as often an inconvenience. Like, oh no, I left my charger upstairs for my phone. Oh, I gotta go upstairs.
Okay, maybe you're thinking, well, yeah, I sit around scrolling on my phone a lot, but at least I run or I go to the gym in the morning. Keith says it's still a problem.
It's not enough to just check off that exercise box for your day and think that you're done and you don't have to move the rest of the day. And there's been studies done in the Netherlands where they had people sit for 3 days straight, and then they had them come back and sit another 3 days but exercise for 1 hour in the morning. And what they found was that 1 hour of exercise in the morning before they sat for the rest of the day was not enough to offset the health harms of sitting.
I know. It feels so unfair that even if you're working out, it's not enough. But I bet some of you are also thinking, whew, good thing I got that standing desk.
I'm not so sure. And unfortunately, my opinion is that the standing desk manufacturers have capitalized on the news headlines that sitting is the new smoking and helped convince many consumers that standing is a healthier alternative to sitting. But if you look at the scientific evidence, it is not convincing.
The evidence is convincing that long periods of sitting increase your risk for a lot of chronic diseases. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but eventually you may get
diabetes, many forms of cancer, heart disease, dementia, and sitting can also affect your mental health and your mood, and ultimately decreases your longevity.
But so many of us do work that requires sitting at a computer a lot. We don't have a choice. So what do we do about it? How do we prevent those chronic health conditions? Or at the very least, how can we avoid feeling just gross like I do at the end of a long day of typing, zooming, and tapping? Well, this is where Keith's findings come in.
If people are going to change their behaviors and tackle this sitting problem that we have, they need targets to shoot for. They need guidance on what do I do? And so really the goal of my lab is to try to figure out what's the least amount of movement that you can do to offset the harms of sitting. And so that's really what we're trying to do is try to figure out how little can we get away with to offset the harms.
So one of the studies that you've done went kind of viral, as they say, over the last year. It was a pretty groundbreaking landmark study. Can you describe it?
Yeah. So the straightforward answer is to offset the harms of sitting, you should move every half hour for 5 minutes. the main take-home message was that folks who moved every half hour for 5 minutes lowered their blood sugar spikes after eating by 60%.
Wow.
And then it also lowered their blood pressure by 4 to 5 points.
Can I ask, those 5 minute movement breaks, are people getting up and like doing jumping jacks, or what are they doing?
This was light walking 2.0 miles per hour on a treadmill.
Oh, not fast at all.
No, it's a stroll. We wanted something relatively light that everybody could do.
Hmm.
And actually, those folks who moved every half hour, they had lower fatigue levels, they felt more energized, and in general had a better mood.
Hmm.
And why I think this is so important is, you know, we spend our time trying to convince the workforce and employers that you should allow your employees to take breaks to move. And it seems counterintuitive to them, like, no, I need them working, I need them productive. That actually a employee who's in a better mood, who's feeling less fatigued and feeling more energized, is a more productive employee.
So I was reading about your work, and I love that there's a prescription, like, do this and you're not going to kill yourself from sitting on your butt all day. So I reached out to you and I was like, what if we could invite our listeners to try out your findings in the wild, so to speak? And I was pleased that you were intrigued. What intrigued you, Keith?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with these, you know, lab-based studies, that they're not real world. I can give you a scientific answer of what you should do about it, but can anybody actually do it? If not, then it's pointless.
Okay, so we, NPR, are partnering with you and Columbia to do a study with listeners should they choose to join. Let's lay out the plan.
Yeah, so the plan is that we're going to ask you to sign up and commit to doing movement breaks.
For 3 weeks.
Yes, and we're going to try a couple different doses. We want to see which ones work and which ones don't. We're going to send you some text messages over the course of the month and just check in and see if you're taking the breaks. If you are, we want to know when are you taking them? What's making you successful in taking the breaks? And if you're not, we just want to understand why not and understand what are your barriers.
Mm.
But we're also interested in seeing, does this change how you feel? Does this change your mood?
Can we be more specific about what counts as an exercise snack?
Yes. So first off, standing doesn't count. So we want you moving. And so our ask here is that you walk either in place, if that's all you can do. You can get a stepper and walk on a stepper. Or just walk, you know, throughout your workplace, throughout your home.
Okay, so shuffling side to side is perfectly acceptable. I'm picturing what might be not acceptable is like you're on this Zoom call with your colleagues and you're the one bopping up and down on the screen. But like, that's what we're talking about here, right, Keith? We're talking about a mindset shift.
Yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately what you're getting at is we have to, it's a culture change.
Mm.
There is this peer social element that we have to break if we're going to actually get this ingrained into everybody's lifestyles.
Okay, last question. What if it works? Like, what's your biggest fantasy about our experiment?
Yeah, if this works with our experiment, this is just fuel for us to then go and say, look, people can do this.
Mm.
And that's going to help us to start paving the way towards system-level change. And that's, for me, where I want to take this.
Okay, so if you are ready to give this project a try and help out Keith Diaz and his team at Columbia University Medical Center, go to npr.org/bodyelectric to find out more. But here's the thing, you only have until Sunday, October 8th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern to sign up, because that is when the study kicks off. If you're listening after the deadline, that's okay. Try it on your own. Follow along. Woohoo! Okay, I am so excited about this. I hope you are too. Please don't be intimidated to take part. Recruit your coworkers, your friends, your family, your neighbors to try it with you. If walking isn't an option, Keith and his team will have alternative exercises too. And remember, like, you can't fail at this. Whether or not you stick with moving every half hour or whatever you get assigned, all of it is vital information for these researchers. So do it for science or just do it for yourself. Go to npr.org/bodyelectric. Please let us know about your experience. Email us, send us a voice memo at bodyelectric@npr.org. You might hear yourself on the series. You can also talk to me on Instagram. I'm at Manoush Z. And on Facebook, we're at TED Radio Hour. Next time on Body Electric, the rise of the personal computer and the consideration that went into designing it for the human body. Not.
I have not seen any evidence that anyone did any kind of usability or human factors analysis in the design of these things, and it's absolutely obvious that they didn't.
That's episode 2. Find it in your TED Radio Hour feed or at npr.org/bodyelectric. Plus, subscribers, you get all these episodes ad-free and extra bonus episodes to enhance your Body Electric experience. Okay, phew, it's finally time for the credits. And you know what? Actually, I'm going to read them shuffling side to side because might as well start. Body Electric was produced by Katie Monteleone and edited by Sanaz Meshkinpour with production support from Rachel Faulkner-White. Original music by David Herman. Our audio engineer was Patrick Murray. This series was made possible by Anya Grundman, Lauren Gonzalez, Lindsay McKenna, with help from Yolanda Sangweni, Beth Donovan, Irene Noguchi, Julia Carney, and Fiona Guerin. Special thanks to Siobhan O'Connor for her brain power, too. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you have been listening to Body Electric from NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how her team makes an impact.
We always do what we like to think of as actionable science. So the work that we do makes its way to things like nutrition and physical activity guidelines for cancer.org, where millions of people come each year to learn about how they can better prevent cancer.
To learn more, go to cancer.org.